Welcome, Rabbi Yisai, Baruchim Habayim. Another week of insights into Parshas HaShavua, Parshas Shlach. As we mentioned a moment ago, part of the shiur is going to be dedicated to a topic from the beginning of the Parsha, and the remainder of the shiur to something from the very end of the Parsha. As we say each and every week, to all those who are joining here in person on the phone, all those who will hear the recording, Ashreichem, Ashreichem. Thank you for the chizuk of participating in the shiur. And one of the main things we hope to accomplish is that it should enhance our Shabbos Kodesh with Divrei Torah. Let's take a look towards the beginning of Parshas Shelach. Obviously, the tragic and devastating story of the Meraglim, something from which we suffer until today. It actually brought about the crying on the 9th of Av, which became the sad funereal day, the most funereal I should say, that of Tisha B'Av. If you're looking inside, take a look for a moment, a few psukim before Perek Yudalid. The pasuk tells us, I apologize, the pasuk right before Yudalid, the last six words, the pasuk is talking about, we saw the giants, we saw the Anokim, we saw the Nephilim. And if you're looking inside the Chumash, the Pasuk tells us, those are the words right before Perek Yudalid begins. The Meraglim, the 10 spies who spoke negatively about Eretz Yisrael, commented, we were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes as well. And it's a pshat we've mentioned countless times in the past. I believe it's from Rav Gifter, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. Anybody who's looking inside this pasuk, and I would suggest that you see the phraseology because it's extremely worthwhile, you'll note that it seems to be backwards. V'nehi ve'einenu kachagovim means we were like grasshopper in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes. But that doesn't seem to be the correct order. More correct would be, they viewed us as grasshoppers, and so in our eyes we felt like grasshoppers. That would seem to be the logical correct order. They viewed us and made us feel like grasshoppers, and that's exactly the way we perceived ourselves and the way we felt, because that's the way they viewed us. And yet, if you take a look, the Pasuk says just the opposite. We were like grasshopper in our eyes. It seems to be backwards, and we've mentioned in the past a tremendous psychological insight that it could really apply to each and every one of us. The Pasuk is teaching us, do you know why they viewed us as grasshoppers? Because that's the way we perceived ourselves. We had such a low self-esteem. We felt about ourselves that we were like grasshoppers. And that's why the Pasuk is teaching us, we were like grasshoppers in our own eyes. And since we had such low self-esteem, since we didn't value who we were, and we perceived ourselves as grasshoppers, v'chein hayinu be'einehem, naturally that's the way they viewed us. They're certainly not going to view us any better than we view ourselves. When a person has low self-esteem, and when a person conveys that image that they don't have any self-worth, then naturally, like a reflection, that's the way people will unfortunately view that person. And that's what the Pasuk is teaching us. Since we perceived ourselves like grasshoppers, that's the way they viewed us. With your Rishus, I'd like to add one note. Take a look at Rashi. Take a look at Rashi on the words, V'chein hayinu be'einehem. What does Rashi say? Five words. Shomanu, we heard. Oymrim zelazeh. They, the giants, the Nephilim, the Anakim, said one to the other, Nimolim. Now what are Nimolim? Nimolim are ants. But who said anything about ants? My Rebbe Rabbi saying, is that not a Moiritik Akasha? Who said anything about ants? We spoke about grasshoppers, an ant is even smaller than a grasshopper. Where did Rashi get that from? Or where is it that we could understand Rashi's saying that they said one to another, look at the Jews, look at them. They are nemalim like ants. But that's not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says like grasshoppers. Perhaps Rashi is teaching us that when a person has low self-esteem and that's the way they view themselves, then the other will view the person even lower and even less. In other words, it's a downward spiral. It's something that unfortunately can spiral out of control. Because we viewed ourselves like grasshoppers, from there they viewed us even smaller than we perceived ourselves. And that's what Rashi is teaching us. Shamanu oimrim ze leze nimolim. We thought we were grasshoppers. Since we conveyed that negative aura and that image, they viewed us as even less than grasshoppers, nimolim, a smaller ant. And obviously the takeaway of this Dvar Torah is extremely clear. The importance of a person realizing their self-worth, the importance of every person, men, women, children, realizing that wherever they're holding and whoever they are, how we're not talking about arrogance, we're not talking about gaiva, haughtiness, or letting things get to your head to you, the point that it's out of control. We're talking about a person having proper self-esteem, realizing what I am and what I could accomplish. How many times have we said over the word from the Kloisenberger Rebbe, Zechusa Yagan Aleinu, that Klal Yisrael is called Yisrael, Yud Shin Reish Aleph Lamed, which stands for Yesh Shishim Ribui Oisiyas LaTaira, the first letter of those five words. Yesh Shishim Ribui Oisiyas LaTaira. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah corresponding to the 600,000 Jews that of a particular age stood at Har Sinai. But that's not true. There are only about half that, 300,000 letters in the Torah. So what in the world does it mean that you say Yisrael stands for Yeshishim Rivi Oseis HaTorah? There aren't 600,000, there are only about 300,000. The Kloisenberger Rebbe says so beautiful, I indicate it with my hands, my two fingers represent two letters. If two letters touch each other, the Sefer Torah is possible. You need a space in between each letter. If there are 300,000 letters, then there are approximately 300,000 spaces. And that's what makes up Yisrael. When it says, Yeshishim Ribui Oisiyas LaTaira, it means there are 300,000 letters and there are 300,000 spaces. And that's what makes the Sefer Torah kosher. And that's the truth about each and every one of us. We're all represented by a beautiful, scintillating, illuminating letter. But not every day do we behave that way. Ein tzaddik baratzas hayasa tov lo yechta. People will do something that they shouldn't, or make a mistake, or commit an aver, whatever it might be. Some days we might only be represented by a space. But have the self-esteem and knowledge that what's today's space can very well be tomorrow's letter. And that's the vart from Rav Gifter. A person has to view themselves with a healthy self-esteem. As a yid, we could accomplish. There's a famous pasuk with a fabulous pshat from Reb Moshe Scherer, Zatzal, the legendary leader of Agudas Yisrael in America. The pasuk speaks about our coming towards Har Sinai, and we're told upon approaching the mountain, we have to be careful, Alois Bahar, in ascending the mountain, ungaya bikatseyu, and touching it, the person, Moisumas, deserves to die. He was such a master of homiletics. Reb Moshe Scherer says such a powerful pshat. You should open up your hearts to this explanation. He says, you know what the pasuk is teaching us homiletically we have to be careful of? Alois Bahar. You could ascend the mountain. You could reach greatness. Ungoya bikatseyu, and you only touch the tip, you settle for 10 cents on the buck, you only take the first step and nothing passed, that person's life is not worth living. Alois Bahar, we have to have the self-esteem of realizing we could ascend the mountain, we could achieve great heights, and a person who has that ability, ungoya bikatseyu, but they settle for 10 cents on the buck and they only touch the tip of the mountain and sell themselves short, that person's life is not worth living. And that's one of the powerful lessons of the Meraglim, how everybody has to realize not gaiva, not arrogance or being haughty, but a healthy dose of self-esteem. And that leads us to our next shot. If you take a look a little bit earlier in the parsha, take a look right after Sheni, Pasuk Chav Beis. The Pasuk tells us, Vayavai ad Chevron, again, Perek Yigim, Pasuk Chav Beis, Vayavai ad Chevron, he came to Chevron. And obviously the question is, what do you mean he came? We're dealing with Kalev and Yehoshua. Kalev and Yeshua should be Vayavau, they came, plural. Why does the Pasuk say singular, he? What happened to Yeshua? It should say they. So Rashi addresses this issue. Take a look at Rashi. Kalev levadei halach sham. Indeed, the only one who went to Kalev himself went. V'nishtateach al kivrei avos. Kalev went there to play, to daven, to be mispalel at the kivrei avos by Avraham, by our avos, by Imois. That's why it went from the plural to the singular. Only one of them went to Chevron, being Kalev, and why did he go to Davin? I once heard a pshat many years ago, I believe it's from the name of the previous Novominsky Rebbe. I'm not referring to the Rebbe that Klal Yisrael lost a year ago, but to his father. The previous Novominsky Rebbe, Zechatzadik Yekodesh Levracha, I heard it in his name so beautifully. What was it? Kalev, you have to understand, when he left Maris HaMachpelah, when he left davening by the kever of Avraham Avinu, Maris HaMachpelah in Chevron, he left with chizuk. He left with renewed strength. If I asked all of you who are listening, what gave him the chizuk? What gave him the strength that now all of a sudden he no longer feared the report of the Anakim and of the giants and all those things that might have frightened him? What gave him the chizuk? The simple explanation is, he davened. And after you daven, you should get chizuk. After you connect to our Creator, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you get chizuk. And the davening, apparently and ostensibly, is what gave him the chizuk to now face the report of the giants, the Nephilim, and the Anakim. That's what it would seem like, that it was davening. But I heard in the name of the previous Novominsky Rebbe, he said an added dimension. Surely the davening gave Kalev the chizuk to now go out and face the evil report, face the giants. However, he says so beautifully, there's something else that gave him chizuk as well. And we should all open up our hearts to this pshat. Here Kalev was standing at the kever of Avraham Avinu. And he heard the negative report, and he heard about the giants, he heard about the Anakim. And as he's about to start the davening, imagine, says the previous Novominsky Rebbe, that he tells himself, one second, I don't have to be afraid of a report out there about supposed giants. Because Chazal tell us about Avraham Avinu, and I quote, Ha'odom ha'godol sheba'anokim ze'avram avinu. Ha'odom ha'godol sheba'anokim ze'avram avinu means the ultimate giant, the ultimate spiritual giant was Avraham Avinu. Now one second, I'm Kalev. I'm a direct descendant of Avraham Avinu. He was my Zaydi. I'm a few generations later, but I come from Avraham Avinu. So if he was a giant, then it must be part of that spiritual greatness. Part of that being a giant is inculcated into the fabric of my DNA. So what should I be afraid of? What should I be afraid of? The report of giants? But I am standing at the kever of Ha'odom HaGodol Shebanokim Ze'avram Avinu. Chazal say the ultimate giant, the giant of all giants, the greatest spiritual giant was Avraham Avinu. He's my Zaydi. I come from Avraham Avinu. I'm his descendant. Part of that greatness, part of that being a giant, must be ingrained in my DNA. And if I am a giant like my Zaydi, or at least to a degree. In other words, he was Ha'odom HaGodol, the greatest giant. But part of that greatness, part of that giant is instilled in me. I have nothing to fear. What a pshat. What a pshat. It was that feeling that part of the greatness is within me that gave him the chizuk, the strength and the fortitude to walk out of Maras HaMachpelah, to walk out of Kivrei Avos, to leave Hebron and say, I have nothing to fear the report of the Anokim and the giants. Do you know who my Zaydi was? And part of that greatness and being a giant is within me. And I think those two pshatim we mentioned to start the shir go hand in hand. The pshat we explained from Rav Gifter is the importance of not lacking self-esteem, but realizing we are Yisrael, and even though one day we might be a space that becomes tomorrow's brilliant and illuminating letter. How does a person develop that healthy self-esteem? How does a person mamish convince and work on themselves? You hear what we're saying? Each and every one of us have a dose of self-esteem. We could accomplish alois bahar, ascending the mountain. The answer is, firstly, davening, tefillah, of course. Additionally, what we said from the previous Novominsker Rebbe, look at where we came from. And I don't just mean our grandmothers and grandfathers that may have been born 70 or 80 years ago. All of us are B'nai Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yakov. All of us come for Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. If they were the ultimate of giant, then we must believe part of that giant, part of that spiritual greatness, is inculcated and ingrained and seared within us. And if we come from them, and they are our Zaydis and Bubbies, then we have part of that spiritual giant within us. I believe it is that that should help us develop and nurture a healthy dose of self-esteem. And now, as we said, we're going to go to the very end of the parsha. By no means do I feel like we should skip about 80 psukim, but there is something at the very end of the parsha I'd like to share with you. And if you take a look at Maftir, it's the very famous parsha of Tzitzis. When we say Kriya Shema, we say this a couple times a day. It's what we call the third parsha of Tzitzis, and it introduces us to the Cheles. V'nasa Tzitzis Akonach Pesil Techeles. You're supposed to put on the Tzitzis Techeles. What a parsha of Tzitzis! Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says on what I just quoted. Techeles, Rashi tells us that a person is supposed to, and it's based on the Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara is found off Mem Gimel Amid Beis. A person is to go ahead and to look at the blue string of the tzitzis, and the Gemara says that will remind him of the blue of the sea. And the blue of the sea reminds him of the blue of the sky. I imagine this is a very, very famous pshat. And the blue of the sky connects us to the Kisa HaKavod, the throne of glory. And then Rashi tells us, when you think about the Kisa HaKavod, that leads us to observe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs. I saw in preparation for tonight's shir such a powerful pshat from the Duvne Magid. The Duvne Magid, Zechusa Yogan Aleinu, asks, one second, take a look at the Navi Amos. The Navi Amos tells us, Paragimel, Pasuk Vav, is it possible that you're going to blow a shofar and people, the Pasuk says, the people aren't going to tremble? But the Duvne Magid says, we see many people that go about their business, even though they hear the blast of the shofar. So what, pray tell, does the Navi Amos mean, that you hear the blast of the shofar and you're going to tremble? Unfortunately, aren't there many times that we hear the blast of the shofar and we don't tremble? So he asks a similar question. Rashi just taught us over here that by seeing the tzitzis and seeing the tcheles, we're going to observe all the mitzvahs. Don't we see many people who have the tzitzis Obviously, a woman doesn't wear tzitzis, but figuratively knows of the concept of tzitzis and doesn't observe all the mitzvahs of the Divrei Magen says. How do you understand? In fact, both comments, how do you understand? The Navi tells us you're going to hear the shofar and tremble. We know plenty you don't. And how does Rashi tell us that you'll wear and learn the concept of tzitzis and observe the tarryag mitzvahs? There are plenty of people who don't. So, of course, the Divrei Magen answers with a parable, with a mashal. There was a poor fellow, a poor and hungry Yid, who ends up in the home of a very, very wealthy Jew, and he's there for a sumptuous dinner. And he sees the host, the wealthy man, sitting on a beautiful upholstered chair, and he sees right in front of him, in front of the armrest, by the edge of the table, is a bell. And he notices that whenever the wealthy man presses the bell, instantaneously a servant comes out of the kitchen with delicacies and sumptuous trays of food. Every time the rich man rings the bell, the same thing happens. He enjoys the feast and he breathlessly runs back to his wife and he tells her about the experience. You're not going to believe this amazing magic button. Watch, it'll work. And the next day, the poor and hungry couple, they invite somebody to come to their home. They couldn't wait. They go out and get the bell. They put it at the head of the table. They want to demonstrate their discovery. And all of a sudden, they start ringing the bell. Ve'enenu. No servants come. No trays of sumptuous food. None of the delicacies. And he's banging and ringing and banging and ringing. And nothing happens. And finally, the invited guest turns to the poor man and his wife. And he says, don't you understand? The only reason the bell worked by the wealthy person is because he had the servants to come out of the kitchen. And the only reason there were trays of food is because he had the wealth to buy the sumptuous meals. But if you don't have the servants and you don't have the food, ringing the bell is meaningless. And the nimshal to the parable is obvious. When a yid is dedicated to avodas Hashem, and a yid is dedicated to his observance and fear of Hashem, then yes, that person will tremble when the shofar is sounded because it reminds him of Yom HaDin. But if a person is totally ignorant in his religious observance, if a person, he or she, leads a totally empty life, then they're going to be entirely unaffected by the blast of the shofar. You can't expect the bell to be rung and it means something. How could the bell of the shofar ring? How could the bell of the shofar blast? It's not going to make a person tremble if they don't put in work, if they lead an empty life, if their life is totally void of doing anything religious to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's the same thing with the tzitzis. When a yid is dedicated to Hashem, in fact, tzitzis is spelled tzadi yud sof, which is begematria 600, as Rashi tells us. You have the five knots and the eight strings is a total of 613, taryag. When a yid is dedicated to a life of the taryag mitzvahs, when a yid is dedicated to fear and observance of the Torah of Hashem, then indeed when he looks at the strings of the techeles and the blue of the tzitzis, it's going to profoundly affect him. But if a person's just going about his business without any meaning, without any taking a moment to pause and realize, Ma chayva b'olama, what am I doing here? Then the symbol of the bell, like the shofar and like the tzitzis, will be meaningless. What a mashal from the Divrei Magen. Of course what the Navi Amos tells us and what Rashi tells us about the shofar affecting us and the tzitzis affecting us is 100% true. But a person has to want it. They have to strive in their observance. They have to strive in their fear of Hashem. They have to strive in their avoda. And then ringing the bell will bring out the servant, bring out the sumptuous meals, because you did something to obtain those items. But not to have anything and expect the bell to ring magically and people are going to come running out with food, it don't happen that way. For tzitzis to profoundly impact us, it's not too early to mention Rosh Hashanah. For the blast of the shofar to make us tremble before Rosh Hashanah, we have to put the work in beforehand, the work of the servant, the work of the sumptuous food, the work of preparing in our religious observance. Then and only then does the blast of the bell, that of the shofar and the tzitzis, have a profound impact on us? How is it that one could achieve this level of working so that the blast of the bell of the shofar and the wearing of the tzitzis, literally and for some figuratively, has a profound impact? Rabbis, I want to share with you a vart from the Sefer Chamudei Tzvi. I've never said this vart before. I just saw it this evening. It's brought down from the Chamudei Tzvi, and I think it's a very, very powerful pshat. And I think this pshat from the Sefer Chamudei Tzvi will tell us how at least we could work on ourselves. Every person could work on their observance. Every person could work on their religious striving. Every person could work on their avodas Hashem. For some it's easier, and for some it's hard. For some it happens quick, and for some it's an entire lifetime. For some they could take tens of miles of a spiritual journey in an hour, and some only move forward a foot in an entire lifetime. But as long as a person tries, as long as a person is willing to do something to ponder and to think what it is that we're doing here, what can we do to become more dedicated in our observance and feel closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam? I believe the pshat in the Chamudei Tzvi gives the answer, and it's such a brilliant, brilliant pshat. Why is it that when the Gemara that I quoted to you a moment ago from Rashi says that you look at the blue of the Techeles, it reminds you of the blue of the sea, which reminds you of the blue of the sky. Why do you need that middle step, the blue of the sea? Why doesn't Rashi, why doesn't the Gemara just say, it's not a Moira Dikakasha? Look at the blue of the Techeles and let it remind you of the blue in the sky. And the sky obviously reminds me of the Kisei Kova, the throne of glory. Why do you need that middle step of the blue of the sea? And listen to what he answers so beautifully. Before answering the question, he first brings our attention to a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Right now, we're up to Perek Gimel. The Mishnah tells us the first Mishnah, Perek Gimel, Pirkei Avos, Akavi ben Mahalal Leimer, Histakel b'shleisha dvar v'einat habor lidei aveira, that if you're willing to contemplate three things, you'll stay far away from an aveira. A person has to know me'ayin basa, from where he came, la'anat ha'olech, where he's headed, v'lefremiyat ha'asi liten din v'cheshbin, in front of whom you're going to give a heavenly accounting. Three famous questions. Then the Mishnah re-asks those questions and gives answers. Me'ayin basa, where did we come from? Etipa srucha, future drop. La'anat ha'olech, where are we headed? The Mokum, to a place that's teeming with worms and maggots, meaning underground. And in front of whom do we have to give a heavenly encounting? In front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, where everything is documented. We have asked countless times the obvious question. Why is it that when this Mishnah was being written, it asks the three questions without answers, and then afterwards it repeats the three questions and then gives the answers? Why did it ask the three questions, where we came from, where we're headed, in front of whom we stand, without any answers, and then re-ask them with answers? Why did it ask it the first time without any answers? Mayuridika, mayuridika kasha? So he says so beautifully, there are answers that are hinted in the question the first time. Oh, not at all like the answers that are given the second time, but Mayra V'Rabbosai, there are answers that are hinted, shall we say, a different type of response. You see, the response that will be given in a moment, those are about the physical body. Those answers are going to talk about the physicality of the body. We came from a putrid drop and we're headed to a place teeming with worms and maggots, and everything is going to have us be accountable. But the first time the questions are asked, we provide the answers. And they're very spiritual answers. They don't speak to our body. They speak to our soul. They don't speak to our guf. They speak to our neshama. Oh, may Ayin Basa, where we came from. We came from the heavens. We came from the clouds of glory. We came from the loftiest, loftiest place. And someday, where are we going to return? We're going to return to that great place. We're going to return to that great place in Shemayim. We're going to return to all of the eternal reward that awaits us. That most awesome light of basking in the divine presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we're going to earn great reward by giving our accounting in front of the Kisei HaKavod. What beautiful spiritual answers. So you see, Rabbi Yisai, the answers that we provide to the questions the first time speak to our neshama, to our soul. Where do we come from? From a great, great light, from Shemayim, from heaven, from the Kisei HaKavod. We're going to return to there. We're going to earn reward that's going to be accounted for. Now that we answer the questions addressing our neshama, our soul, now we re-ask the questions and we give a different set of answers applying to our guf, the physicality of our existence. Says the Sefer Chamudei Tzvi, it's the same thing with the tzitzis. When you look at the tcheles, you look at the blue in the tzitzis, eventually you want to think about the Kisei HaKavod, the heavenly throne of glory. But before you could do that, you have to think of two things, the sea and the sky. The sea is going to represent speaking to your guf, and the sky represents speaking to your soul, to your neshama. You see, the reason that we speak about the reminder of the sea is to tell us those oceans think they're so mighty. The oceans seem to have colossal, colossal waves that look like they're going to engulf the war, and yet they're held up by the sand that's on the shore. Sometimes a person thinks they're going to gobble up the world with their physicality. They're going to acquire tremendous and huge assets. They think that they're finite. And at the end of the day, like the sand of the shore, that is what ends their striving. So you see, when we think about the sea, it teaches us to control what we think is our unlimited physical desire to conquer the world. But when we think of the sky, that reminds us of our spiritual soul, our neshama. And therefore, says the Chamudei Tzvi, here is the way you learn up the Gemara. When you look at the blue of the tcheles, it first reminds you of the blue of the sea. To work on your physicality. Because like the sea, the tumultuous storms and the colossal waves and vast oceans, it thinks it's going to overwhelm the world. I'm going to acquire money and assets and physical and everything and everything and everything. And then what? And then it's ended by the dust that a person returns to. But then that sea reminds us of the sky. And the sky reminds us of our neshama, of our soul, of our ability to soar so high and high, limitless, limitless, and how much we could achieve in our spirituality. Oh, now you've learned the lesson of the sea and the sky. Now you're ready to think of the blue of the Kisei HaKavod. What a magnificent, magnificent pshat. What an amazing pshat. And I think that's the answer to what we said earlier. If we want the shofar to have a profound impact on and make us tremble, if we want the tzitzis that we wear literally and figuratively to affect us, then we have to remember, 1 minute, the tzitzis, you don't go immediately to the Kisei HaKavod. You first take a stop at the sea and a stop at the sky. The sea is about the guf and the physicality. And the sky is about the ruchnius, the spiritual and the soul. And now you've learned, and now that you've learned the lesson of the sea, that when it comes to the physicality, you can't allow it to reign supreme. And then the lesson of the sky, that spiritually, alois bahar, we could accomplish so very much. Now you're ready to think of the blue of the Kiseh HaKavod, the throne of glory. And I believe, Rabbi Yisai, that's something that we could all accomplish. And I hope Be'ezras Hashem, indeed from what we learned in the beginning of the parsha, that we're able to develop and nurture a healthy dose of self-esteem so we could accomplish and strive more and more, greater and greater. It comes from tefillah connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and it comes from remembering, do you know who my Bubbies and Zaydis are? Part of that greatness is in my very DNA. Let's also remember the lesson of the Tcheles. For the bell to have a profound impact and to bring out servants and sumptuous food, there's got to be something backing it up. For the Shofar to help us tremble, and from the Tzitzis to make us remember all of the observance of the mitzvahs, there has to be something that we first have to accomplish. And that's the lesson of the sea and the sky. Just like Akavya ben Mahalalel answered the same three questions, one time speaking to our neshama and one time speaking to our guf, so too we think of Tzitzis and the Tcheles, we think of the sea and the sky, our guf and our neshama, and then we're able to connect to the Kiseh HaKavod. May we all be zoicha to strive and to yearn and to achieve in our avodas Hashem.